Brad Locke.
And I'm Gene Phelps, and this is Prep Rally.
We're talking Northeast Mississippi High School sports, brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome into a new episode of Prep Rally, a production of the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. I'm your host, Brad Locke, joined, as always, by Gene Phelps and also Blake Morgan. It's become kind of a three-man show here. It's a webcast and a podcast. The webcast, of course, coming to you every Wednesday around 11 a.m. at DJournal.com. If you miss it, want to watch it again, check it out at DJournal.com later in the day. And the podcast version drops Wednesday afternoons. You can find it in iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. And be sure to follow us on Twitter as well, at djournalpreps. So here we are, our fellas. We're 3 weeks into the high school football season. We're starting to learn a few things about some teams. I mean, we're still not into division play yet, but we're getting there. Some teams are really gaining some momentum heading into division play in the next few weeks. And so what we're going to do is, as we've done before, we're going to look back at some key results from last week, and then we're going to look ahead to some big games coming up this week. And, of course, we'll have Athletes of the Week as well. Gene will have that later on in the program. So, anyway, thanks for tuning in, whether you're watching or listening. Appreciate it. Let's start, fellas, with the rewind. And looking back at some of the key results from last week. Let's start with your game, Gene. Well, actually, you both were there.
Correct.
We double-staffed that puppy. It was Tupelo at Shannon, and Tupelo runs away with it. 42-10 was the final score. Looks like maybe Tupelo has figured out its quarterback question. The McGlone kid had a really, really solid game, didn't he?
Yeah, I think the sophomore is really the guy they would like to have seen stepped up. I'm talking about the Tupelo coaching staff and kind of take control. You've got a senior, Ray Sandroni, and a junior, Sal Sanders, who have also been in kind of the quarterback battle during the preseason. I would say out of those two guys, Sandroni's had the most snaps, but McGlone got the start and played, I guess, just about every snap in the game against Shannon. He didn't have big numbers, but he made big plays. He had a 53-yard run on they were running a zone read, and both the zones, the read and the option were covered. And so McGlone just kind of split it, went 53 yards. He also had a 1 yard run to cap a drive, and he had a 25 yard pass for a touchdown, which is about as pretty a thrown ball as you've ever seen. The coach even noted that. He said, you can't make a throw any better than that. Wow. Now, he's still got a little bit of a live arm.
Yeah.
A strong arm, a live arm. But I think as long as he's getting the majority of the snaps, and sometimes you get to a point in the season where you're trying to win games, and Tupelo's done just that, but you're also trying to build toward the future too.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the future may help you now. And exactly. I think that's the case with Stefan. He's a very personable young man, smart. He's just, I'm not going to say he's carefree, but he has a good time playing.
Yeah.
And I think you need someone like that. I don't think he's, he said he was a little nervous. I know when they had that first scrimmage of the year, the week before the game against Itawamba, he said he was a little nervous, had a little jitters the first series. That's natural for anybody. But I think Drew Brees probably is a little nervous at the on the first series. And he's a Super Bowl MVP. But anyway, McGlone, really good first start in a rivalry game. Like I said, he didn't put up big numbers, but I think big numbers are there for him.
Yeah, certainly.
Because Tupelo has the skill players to get the ball to.
Yeah.
And that's what they're working on now.
And like I said, Blake, you were there as well. And I believe you wrote about the defense for Tupelo, which – you know, Shannon offense pretty potent coming into the game, but they were held to 10 points.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it last week, and I wrote about Shannon's offense last week and expected them to come in and I don't know, maybe put up some points, and they were just really stifled by the Tupelo defense. And I know Gene's talked about on the show before that he's asked Trent Hammond, the Tupelo coach, is it as good as the defense that helped carry the team to the state championship a few years ago. And Hammond said, no, let's not jump to anything like that yet. But yeah, they looked really good. And they did a really good job of controlling what Shannon could do. And Shannon was really just limited to dump off passes and trying to, you know, keep Tupelo's defense on the field and hope for a big play to be sprung. And
yeah,
Tupelo just didn't spring any plays. I mean, even though, I mean, the play disparity was great. I don't know if you remember what it was, Gene. It was something like 50 to 14 really? Plays. Like Shannon had 50 plays, something like that. It was maybe a little less, maybe like 45 to Shannon or to Tupelo's 14. So, I mean, the defense in the first half, the defense right. was on the field a lot for Tupelo, and they just didn't give up any points.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah.
So anyway, so Tupelo improves to 3-0 there.
Yeah, I just want to say one other thing. You've got, of course, your inside linebackers, Jet Johnson and Diesel Howell. You got Diesel Jet back there. And they're both leading the team in tackles. They make a lot of tackles. They made a lot of tackles the other night. And Tupelo did play without Peter Gray.
It's right.
Outside linebacker who's been a star early in the season. I will go to practice today to find out what his status is. He was hoping to be back for this Brandon game with some rehab.
Yeah.
Coming back from a dislocated shoulder. But that sounds kind of gruesome, but I don't think it was as bad as first thought.
Yeah.
So anyway, Tupelo defense should only get better. They'll be tested this week.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that Brandon game coming up here in a few minutes. Another big game from last Friday, Kossuth defeated Baldwin 28-19. Beating Baldwin is always impressive. That was at Baldwin too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was. And they did it without Jaylee Adams having a huge night. He had like 94 yards rushing, which for most running backs is good for him. You know, it's nothing for him to run for 200 yards.
Yeah. And, right,
but he did score twice. And so I think that speaks well to Kossuth. You know, maybe there's a thought there that, though, they got Jaylee Adams and not much else. But, I mean, it looks like they played pretty well all around.
Yeah, I mean, they played pretty well. And I went and looked up the stats on Max Preps. It Kossuth has them down, had them down for 105 yards and two touchdowns. I think we had them 94 yards. You never know how people take the different stats and whatnot. But, yeah, I mean, you know, so for Adams, not that impressive of a game. For anyone else, you know, that he'd be the lead guy, right?
Yeah.
We'd be writing about. But, yeah, I mean, Baldwin, they did what they could to limit Adams, but Kossuth still found a way. Baldwin's, you know, after starting out really well, I saw them in the first game, in their second game, and in their jamboree, actually. And I was really impressed with how explosive the offense is. And I think teams have really figured out that if you stop the running game for Baldwin, which just hasn't been that strong, the passing game becomes pretty predictable.
Yeah.
And then that makes some things tough. So Baldwin's going to have to go back to the drawing board. They face Adamsville this week, who's 3-0 and from Tennessee.
Yeah.
So they have another test, and they're going to have to go to the drawing board and try to come up with a different way to score some points.
And then another big game, big rivalry game, is the A game. Aberdeen and Amory play that every year. And it looked like Amory had it in the bag at halftime. They were up by 20 points. And then in the second half, I believe they got shut out. And Aberdeen came back to win 44-34. Fred Fields, quarterback, had a nice game, 13 of 21, 290 yards passing, three touchdowns. And a big win for Aberdeen because they started off 0-2 and have not looked good. They lost. They got blown out by Corinth. They lost by 17 to New Hope, which is not a program you think of as anywhere close to elite normally.
Right.
It's a team that Aberdeen normally would beat.
Yeah.
But then to get a big win against your rival like that, to come back and beat them in a big game for them, that's, you know, maybe they've turned some kind of corner there in Aberdeen.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't talked to anyone from Aberdeen about the win, but I bet you they would say, I mean, they came into the game really young. They came into the season really young.
Yeah.
And to answer like they did in that second half, they have to be really impressed with how the team came together and grew through that, right? And so, you know, maybe this will be a launching point. You know, I don't think they'll go, you know, 7-0 to finish the year, however many games they have left. But I think that this could be one of those games that where they'll look back and say, that was maybe a turning point, a growing point for this team.
Really, and you look at their schedule, really their non-division schedule is to me looks tougher than their division schedule, because they've got Calhoun City this week at Calhoun City. They're always tough. Get Itawamba AHS at home. I believe Itawamba's still unbeaten, aren't they? 3-0 right now.
Yeah.
And then they've got at Shannon.
So
they're going to, you know, we'll continue to see if they really have improved these next three games. Aberdeen there with a big A game win. Other notable results from this past weekend, just want to mention real quick, Starkville, our number one large school, one of the best teams in the state, they defeated West Point handily, 28-6. So, yeah, the Yellow Jackets are, again, the real deal. They're 3-0. Pontotoc, there's one of our little, I guess, a bit of a surprise team, Gene. They defeated New Albany 42-21. They're 3-0. And then Itawamba AHS, as I mentioned a minute ago, was 3-0 after defeating Saltillo 28-12. So there are some, so this is a little recap of some of last week's key games. Let's now look ahead to what's coming up in week four on Friday, some key matchups to look at. And let's start by going back to Tupelo, Gene. They're hosting the number two ranked team in the state, Brandon, which is 2-1.
Lost to Clinton.
Lost to Clinton.
28-21 last week.
And Clinton's Clinton number one in the state.
I'm
trying to remember now.
I can't remember who's number one.
Well, you know what? I'll go look it up. But still, regardless, Tupelo's got a big test coming.
Yeah, there's some strong teams down in the Jackson area. Clinton, Northwest Rankin, Madison Central, Brandon. You know, this Brandon team beat Tupelo pretty handedly last year.
Yeah, yeah. In fact,
40-17, something like that, maybe 51-17 in a rain delayed or lightning delayed.
I remember that. Yeah, now Clinton is the number one overall, and Brandon's the number two overall. Yeah, then you go to 6A, same thing, number one and two, Clinton and Brandon.
This will still be by far the best team that Tupelo's faced this year. You got week two with McLaughlin at quarterback. You know, what kind of this will be a chance for him to see how he does against quality competition. Tupelo's defense will be tested.
And not that Shannon wasn't quality, but this is a whole different level with Brandon. The number, again, one of the best teams in the state. They'll be vying for a state title.
I talked with Trent Hammond the other day, and they'd just been watching some film on Brandon and just beginning to put together their scouting report. And he said they got a lot of good athletes, and they're which you would think for a team that's favored to do some of the things they're favored to do this year and be right there competing for a state championship. And the fact that, you know, they handled Tupelo pretty well last year, it's going to be by far Tupelo's toughest test. Maybe it's Tupelo's toughest test the entire season.
Includes
South Panola and
In
Columbus, which I think's had a very good team too.
It's no easy road for Tupelo, no doubt. So you got McLaughlin going. You know, this is, like you said, really going to be a test for him. I wonder, will he be on a bit of a short leash? Because you got Race Androne, he's a senior. Maybe he'll have more poise. But I mean, McLaughlin just seems to be that playmaker type, which is what you need against this kind of Brandon team.
I don't know. McLaughlin can throw the ball down the field. Tupelo runs a lot of wide receiver screens. I still think we'll see a lot of those passes. Tupelo, we didn't even mention, Tupelo's got a really great 1-2 punch in the backfield with Jaquarius Williams. LeBryant's only got like about 130 yards rushing this season, but he had some cramps in week two, which hampered his carries. Last week he had broke off a couple of big runs. Both those guys, and Blake can attest about Jaquarius Williams. I mean, the guy's got great vision. He doesn't stop moving his legs. He breaks tackles, and then when he gets in the open, he does have some speed. You know, I don't know what the game plan is. I don't know anything about the Brandon defense or what they will do, but I think they'll probably stick with McLaughlin unless he goes out there and throws two or three picks and tumbles it all away and looks like he doesn't have a handle on what's going on.
Yeah. Well, that game will be at Tupelo, so that may be one advantage there for the Golden Wave taking on Brandon. Another game to look at is Boonville, now our number one small school. They moved up this week in the rankings. They're 3-0. Going to host Corinth, which is 1-2. And, Blake, I mean, you look at Baldwin, they're playing really good defense. They're giving up less than 11 points per game so far.
I know. And Boonville, I'm writing about their game with Corinth for Friday's paper, kind of previewing it and whatnot. Coming into the year, Boonville lost won three games last year. They wanted to reinvent kind of the offense.
Yeah.
They went and got Kyle Bond, who was the wide receivers coach at Tupelo last year, to run the offense.
Yeah.
They wanted it to be a run-heavy offense that was reliant on seniors, and they would throw it when they would need to. And that's precisely what they've done. Senior quarterback Preston Stroop has done a really great job this year leading the team, but has only completed 17 passes.
Yeah, just not throwing it a lot.
Yeah, you haven't really needed to, right? Yeah, I saw them play against Baldwin in week two, and they just control the pace of the game. They control the clock and kind of, keep punching you in the mouth and then score the points that they need to score.
Yeah, it seems like, there's probably still obviously room for improvement. They did hang 44 on Nettleton last week, but you mentioned the Baldwin game. I think they played on a muddy field, but they won 13-6. Week one, they beat Walnut. They scored 22 points. So there's like an offense, like you said, ball control and just does what's necessary, and couple that with a strong defense, and that's a pretty good combination for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So Boonville will be hosting Corinth, which, again, has a 1-2 record. And then we've got the Crosstown Classic, always a good game, Lafayette and Oxford. Lafayette looking for its first win. Oxford, our number 5 ranked large school, is 2-1. And you had a story in today's paper, Blake, about Chris Cutliffe, and he played in this rivalry. In fact, I'm old enough, I remember when I covered Chris as a player at Oxford High. He was a pretty good quarterback for them back then. Now he's the first-year head coach, so obviously he's very familiar with this game and what it means.
Yeah, and that's just what I wanted to try to capture with the story, is how cool it was that he, was a quarterback for this rivalry, and now he's going to be coaching it, and kind of the differences and the similarities between that. But Oxford's been pretty good so far. They're number 5 in our big school rankings for the Journal. They have 2 wins over Madison Central and South Haven, which were both games that were up in the air in the fourth quarter and that his team kind of pulled out late, which he was really proud of. And their only loss been to Starkville. I mean, Starkville's the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's not like that's a knock at all. So, they're coming in, they're feeling good about themselves, and they're going to try to move to a 3-1 record. John Reese McClure has really stepped up at quarterback, only a sophomore coming into that role. But has thrown for 746 yards and 6 touchdowns, and has really taken control of that offense.
Yeah, and you look at Lafayette, and again, they're 0-2. They lost to Horn Lake to open the season. They had an open week, then they lost at Grenada. And, they got a pretty tough non-division schedule as well. Oxford this week, then Louisville and Charleston, both at home. But those are two traditionally strong programs right there. And then they'll get into division play on the 30th of September against Ripley. So Lafayette trying to put things together, and obviously a big win. Maybe they can pull an Aberdeen, get a big win over their rival, and maybe that'll catapult them to better things. So
yeah,
those are some of the big games coming up here this week. A few more notable matchups just to watch. A good rivalry game here. Mantachie is visiting Morville. You got Saltillo at Ripley and Houston at East Webster. Gee, now that one fascinates me. Houston and East Webster. That's a 4A, I believe, versus 1A, or East Webster 2A.
I really like that matchup. Yeah. If I wasn't covering Tupelo, I'd be going to East Webster. I mean, just really think that is a great matchup there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wanted to say something.
It's East Webster's 2A, excuse me. But still, that's
very good. Number 1 ranked 2A team in the state for the Associated Press.
3-0.
Mantachie at Morville. While this year Morville's 1-2 and Mantachie's 0-3, they will now be playing for the Battle of the Highway 371 Cup.
Is that a trophy? So, if that trophy game now?
That's a trophy apparent. So move over Skunk Bowl, Joe Bowl, and A-game. Morville and Mantachie are playing for a cup. One of the parents for Mantachie came to coach T.J. Seago. T.J. Seago asked John Keith, Morville's first-year coach, hey, would you be okay if we played for like a trophy? So the parent went out and bought this trophy. It's a foot and a half tall cup. And it's going to be the Highway 371 Cup. That's the highway that Morville and Mantachie are on.
Yeah, they're about 10, 15 miles apart.
8 miles.
8 miles, okay. Yeah.
It's been called, somebody called it the battle for the 8 mile, whatever. John Keith, Morville's coach, said he always wanted to call it the battle for Shiloh. There's a Shiloh community, which is on the line between Itawamba County, where Mantachie is, and Lee County.
Right.
Morville, and he wanted to call it the battle for Shiloh, which is a community there. But anyway, Morville and Mantachie. I mean, that's a big game for those communities, no matter what their records are.
Yeah, it is.
And so now they're playing for something. They'll be
cool.
One team will hoist the cup.
Cool. That's a cool story there. Okay. Good stuff. So those are some of the matchups. We'll have all the coverage you need of these games coming up in your Friday journal and at djournal.com. And, of course, game coverage the next day, Saturday's journal as well. All right, time for Athletes of the Week, Gene. We do this every week. We honor a male and a female athlete for their excellence on the field of play. So, Gene, let's start with the female athlete. Who we got?
Well, Summer Crider, boy.
We know that name.
Give old Summer. She might as well just give it to her every week.
Her, Hallie Donald.
Yeah. Earlier this week, in a game against Houston, Summer had 4 hits. 3 of those were home runs.
So much for the home runs going down this year. Yeah,
so much for the bat pressurization and all that. But Summer's got that swing. She's the Hank Aaron of slow.
She the one you call tiny the
toy cannon.
Toy cannon. Yeah,
yeah, that was kind of taken from an old major league player. Played for the Houston Astros, Jimmy Wynn. He was short, stocky, and they called him the toy cannon.
Nice.
I wouldn't say that Summer's stocky by any means,
but she's small.
But she's small. She can get the bat through the zone,
yeah,
and put it out of the ballpark. Male athlete of the week, Stephon McGlon.
Low quarterback.
Guy steps in, sophomore, first start, leads his team to a rivalry win, and scores accounts for 3 touchdowns.
Yeah, like you said, not big numbers, but he got him in the end zone 3 times. That's what matters, to get him in the end zone. That is. So your athletes of the week, Summer Crider of Morville, Stephon McGlon of Tupelo. Congrats to those two. And that's it for today's show, my friends. Thanks for tuning in. Again, it's a webcast and a podcast. The webcast goes live around 11 a.m. every Wednesday at djournal.com. The podcast version drops later in the day. Find it in iTunes, any of your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com. Give us a follow on Twitter at djournalpreps, and check out a couple of our other podcasts. We have the Double Coverage podcast, talking about Ole Miss and Mississippi State sports with Paris Alford and Logan Lowry. New episodes every Thursday. And then we have the Memo podcast, news and entertainment in Northeast Mississippi with myself and W. Derek Russell, 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, and Thursdays. Look for a new episode of that this afternoon. That's it. Blake, Gene, thanks again, fellas. Excellent work. And that's it. We'll be back next Wednesday to talk about what happened in week 4 and look ahead again to what's going on in high school football. Until then, have a good one.